It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. I guess first things first, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We're not going to even touch the decade stuff, are we?
No.
Okay.
It's stupid. It's a stupid argument.
Wait, which part's stupid? Which one's stupid?
The argument that the decade hasn't ended yet. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah. Because starting the first year as just the number one, which I was told is how the calendar started. Like, year zero is actually year one or something like that. It got very confusing for me. I just kind of said, you know what? I'm gonna just mark off 10 years as 10 years and not 11. So.
I don't like the thought of counting 1990 as part of the 80s and the year 2000 as part of the 90s. That's stupid. So happy new decade, everyone. It's a new decade.
Jesse Granger does not believe your decade shenanigans. Quite frankly, neither do I. Like, it's a hard sell for me that the year 2020 is part of the 2010s.
Yeah. You know who's having the best 2020s decade?
John fucking Merrill.
Of any person on earth. Not just hockey players, not just Golden Knights. I mean, I don't think anybody on earth is having a better 2020 than John Merrill.
So on the Golden Knights Insider Show, we do this new feature every Friday where it's our night of the week, right? So Chris, myself, Frank, we all bring to the table some more research than others. But we all bring to the table who we think was the best Golden Knight player in that calendar week. And I've been right every single time. Even if the fans don't agree with me, like even if people that vote on the poll don't agree with me.
I thought you were saying you won the vote every time. No, you're just right.
I've been right every single time. Every single time. Like when Will Carrier fought Brendan Lemieux and then had a goal and an assist in a three-game span, he was clearly the night of the week, and some people thought it was Max Pacioretty, but you expect that out of Pacioretty. You don't expect it out of Will Carrier. I was right. I'm just saying. but this is going to be a spoiler, because by the time you guys are hearing this, the Friday edition of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show will have already aired. It would have already been done, and you will come to know after the fact or whatever that my night for this week is John Merrill. Unless Chapman takes it and screws that all up, or unless Frank takes it and screws it all up.
How is someone going to pick someone other than John Merrill?
Shut up, man. That's the whole... okay, last week, I had to... Because it was consensus Malcolm Subban, right? Like,
yeah.
The Golden Knights played two games. They won one game. Malcolm Subban happened to be in goal for that game. Only allowed a goal. It was very clearly Malcolm Subban. So what did I do? I bent the rules a little bit, and I just said, well, I'm going to present an argument for Pierre-Édouard Bellemare. Because it doesn't say current knights. It just says night of the week.
Jeez.
He used to be a Golden Knight. Had two goals. And what's great about it is I got 39% of the vote.
People love Bellemare.
I'm just saying. They hated
Fan
him when
favorite.
He scored.
Nah,
but
nah. Even when he scored, the hatred wasn't there.
Dude,
people
the
love
boos.
Bellemare.
The boos were real.
People love Bellemare.
The boos were real.
Which, rightfully so. He's awesome.
Yeah, Bellemare's fantastic. But, so, obviously I'm going to bring John Merrill to the table. Unless those other two guys pick John Merrill, then I'm going to have to go against...
Then you'll be wrong.
The natural law of selection and how things should be. Like, John Merrill is the guy.
If you pick someone other than John Merrill, then you'll be wrong.
Yeah, I don't like being wrong, though. Like, and I feel like I can present a compelling enough argument for somebody else. And I also know that it's absolutely ridiculous because John Merrill only played one game as a forward and scored one goal.
He played like 9 minutes and 10 seconds.
For the most, 9 minutes and 11 seconds of effective-ass hockey. John Merrill.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful.
My favorite part of John Merrill as a forward is John Merrill high in the zone and just immediately playing defense. I've never seen a forward skate backwards that much in a game.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying so hard to forecheck and we talked to him after the game and he was great. He's like, I was just trying to stay above the puck at all times. Like, my number one focus was don't be the last guy out of the zone.
Yeah.
Don't get caught in the zone while the other team's going the other way. So he was playing super conservatively, and he was playing like a defenseman half the time. But he did get in front of that net a couple times. He obviously, on the goal he scored, he got in front of there. But, like, he was forechecking a little bit. It was great. Merrill is such a hilarious guy. Like, it couldn't – there isn't a player on the team that it could have happened to that it would have been better for just, like, quote purposes after the game, because he's just great.
Now, after the game, he did say – was it you that asked him about – grading his performance?
No, that was Ken.
It was Ken. Okay. I couldn't remember. But Ken asked about grading his performance. Merrill said he'll leave that up to us. I tried to ask that to Frank and Dan last night on the postgame show, but we got sidetracked for some reason. I'm going to grade John Merrill quite simply A. He probably should have scored two goals, yeah, at least.
He had that rebound that bounced over his stick with the wide open net.
He also had a nice deflection through the slot. Like, that was kind of ridiculous.
That was right before the rebound.
And then the rebound comes out, and he has a chance at that, too. So, like, it's not hyperbolic to say John Merrill could have scored three goals last night.
Yeah. I mean, he was disappointed in his effort. Only one goal. I'm lying. He wasn't disappointed at all. Merrill was so pumped. And he's like, the best quote was, he was like, I'll play forward. I'll play defense. I'll play goalie. I just want to help this team out. And like, that is so John Merrill. And then meanwhile, a couple stalls down, Fleury told us, I just hope he doesn't play goalie, because then he'll take my job too.
What's so funny about this is, and I don't know how your Twitter reacted after you tweeted out that John Merrill was going to play forward, but almost immediately the reaction that I saw in my mentions was, why not Theodore?
Yeah.
Why not Theodore? And I mean, I understand why that sentiment was out there. Shea Theodore has tremendous offensive upside. Shea Theodore is also, in the past for the Golden Knights, played forward for a period or two. But the reality...
In Calgary, in that like 7-0 blowout up in Calgary.
But the reality of the situation is, Shea Theodore is your best defenseman this season. Most consistent, top to bottom, hands down. And no disrespect to John Merrill, but John Merrill defensively is not Shea Theodore.
Yeah.
They're different players. And why not? Like, why not John Merrill?
The answer to me on, like, why not Theodore is you want to maximize Shea Theodore. And Shea Theodore playing the position that he's played his whole life for 20, 25 minutes is much more important to the team winning than 9 minutes on the fourth line with Ryan Reeves and Nicholas Waugh. Like, that's now, if you're going to put Theodore with in place of Marchessault, switch him for Marchessault. Then okay, maybe we're talking if you're playing with Carlson and Smith.
I would be there for it, probably because Alex Tuch did not look good last night.
He struggled. He's having a hard time on the left side.
So why keep doing the same thing over and over again?
He needs to be on the right side. The issue is, to move him onto the right side, it means moving Cody Glass to the left side. And like before last night, I probably would have been fine with that, because Glass hadn't shown any reason to keep him in that current position. But Cody Glass finally looked comfortable last night. Like, you could see the thinking was, he wasn't thinking. Mm-hmm. He was just playing hockey.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's two things that you can go with here. Will Carrier has the speed between Carrier and Tuch is pretty marginal, right? Like, both guys are incredibly fast players. Carrier is north-south. Alex Tuch is a little bit more creative when he enters the zone. Alex Tuch likes to hold on to the puck a little bit more. When Will Carrier gets the puck in the neutral zone, you know exactly where it's going. You know exactly where you need to be. Alex Tuch, it's a little bit more, I don't want to say loosey-goosey, but there's more options that Tuch presents when he's in the offensive zone than, say, Will Carrier.
I think Tuch is the most unpredictable player with the puck on the Golden Knights.
So how much of Cody Glass finally looking comfortable is the fact that he's playing with that predictable speed of Will Carrier and the steadying presence of Paul Stastny?
I think it helps.
So would you want to see that go away? Now that Cody Glass is finally looking like he's putting it all together, and I want to give a lot of credit, not all the credit, but a lot of credit to his two line mates, especially from last night, because that's been as dangerous as they've looked in a long time.
Oh, that was the third line's best game of the season. That might have been the best third line game in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights.
It's very possible.
They were dominant.
So I don't feel like it should change.
Yeah, but then what do you do with Tuch?
I mean, that's
healthy scratch. The one, like, he's Listen, there's no way you can argue that, even if Tuck's playing bad, there's no way you can argue that players like Noshik and Reeves are better than Alex Tuck.
No, but I do think at some point, the way Alex has been playing lately, it might do him some good to watch a game or two from the press box.
Man, that's, I'm not ready to go there.
I'm just saying, like, the confidence isn't there right now. And he needs to get it back, but the argument that I made when it comes to Alex Tuck right now is, how do we expect a guy to mature? How do we expect him to get better? How do we expect him to develop when his line has been a rotating cast of characters? He's had three different centers so far this year.
And not only are they different players, they're different types of players,
too. Exactly. So the identity of that line is, it's a mismatch. But if you're getting something out of them and you put a lot of weight and a lot of emphasis on this homestand, as Gerard Gallant and the Golden Knights have done, I don't know that it's the worst thing in the world if he sits for a game.
So you would keep, you'd have Noshik, Waugh, Reeves on the fourth? Because you're not, obviously Merrill's
not. Yeah, I mean, it would be the only.
Although he was wearing a white jersey today at practice.
As much as I want John Merrill. Well, I'm conflicted. And we'll get back to Alex Tuck in a minute. Like, I want this performance by John Merrill to be perfect, untarnished, right? It's like you meet a girl, everything's great, and it's for the summer, and then you both agree at the end of the summer to, like, never call each other again because you know things are going to get complicated and you know that it's not going to work out well, and you've got this period of time where everything's perfect and you just never want to tarnish it. You always want to look back fondly at that. That's how I feel about John Merrill as a forward.
Like, by the way, that is a metaphor I've, like, never heard or ever heard of that situation, but I'm glad you had that, buddy.
Summer camp, man. Like, it's legit, right? Like, hey, you're cool, but, like, I'm going back home. I don't need to see you anymore. Like, it's totally fine. But the point I'm trying to make is, I don't ever want anything to challenge the beautiful 60 minutes or 9 minutes and 11 seconds John Merrill spent as a fourth line left winger and scored a goal, and it was fantastic.
I couldn't agree more. If he plays again, it's obviously not going to go that well.
No.
And
against St. Louis.
I agree. I think Merrill should retire as a forward. You can't top that. It's as good as it gets. That was the greatest moment of the season so far.
Yeah.
So let's say, all right, we're going to keep the third line Carrier, Stastny, Glass. That's the best it's looked all year.
Yep.
Do you send Waugh back down and make the fourth line Noshik, Tuck, Reeves?
I think you could do that.
Alex Tuck on the fourth line sounds wrong, but to be honest, three big guys who can skate, that's three. Like, Tuck isn't physical like Reeves, but he's built the same way as Ryan Reeves. Like, Tuck and Reeves look similar on the ice. They're both fast. They can get in on the forecheck. Like, I don't think that's out of the, like, you, like, there's no way you could do that. Like, it's not out of the question. I think it's weird having Alex Tuck on the fourth line, but
I think if you don't want to sit him a game, which, again, I'm not saying Alex Tuck is not as good of a hockey player as Noshik or Reeves or anybody else. Like, I'm very much aware that Alex Tuck's high-end skill is much better than those players. I get it. But right now, he doesn't have any confidence. And right now, he's not playing with any purpose. And I think that's the big thing. Would I entertain the idea of Noshik, Tuck, and Reeves? Absolutely. Why? Because they're simple.
Yeah.
They simplify everything. There's no second guessing what you should or shouldn't do in the offensive zone. Is it over the blue line? Yes. Is it in deep? No. Get it there.
Yeah.
And that would probably help Alex just take his brain out a little bit.
Yeah. You mentioned confidence. That, to me, Cody Glass last night, you could see it. Like, okay, so Cody Glass made the worst play of his NHL career the game before, where the puck was just sitting in front of the net, and it was all Cody Glass's for the taking, and all you have to do is whip that puck 200 feet down the ice, and it's out of danger. For some reason, which I haven't talked to Cody about it, so I don't know what the answer was, but he sat there and looked at that puck and watched it get scored on his own goalie. I have no idea what was going through his mind.
It wasn't a banner moment for Tuck either, because as you look at Holzer on that play, he's the last man into the zone and jumps around Alex Tuck untouched and jumps on that puck. Like, it was not good enough in terms of defense from either player. sure, more onus on glass because the puck's right there. Just rifle it, you're out.
Yeah, so because that was kind of in a scrum in front of the net and because it was like a stick battle, Cody got a lot of grief on Twitter for not being strong enough in stick battles. And then he comes out, and it wasn't just that he scored. It was that he manhandled that stick battle in the slot and then roofed it right after it. So, like, I feel like that goal, not only that he got a goal, but the way he got that goal was against all the criticism he had just faced. You could see he was a different player. Like, after that moment in that game, when he had the puck, he looked confident. He's looking for Stastny. Him and Stastny had that great give and go that, mm-hmm. I don't know if it went off the post or if Carter Hart made the save, but it was a
post, outside
great
of the post.
Chance. Yep. Cody Glass is such a creative offensive player. When he doesn't have confidence, it basically makes him useless. It makes him, like, you need Cody Glass confidently making plays in the offensive zone because that's what he does best. When he's not doing that, he's not good in the corners because he's a 20-year-old. So if you take away his creativity, he basically becomes useless. You need him to have that confidence. You need him to be creative in the offensive zone. And I think we saw that. And hopefully, now that doesn't mean it's going to continue. It could just disappear just like that if St. Louis comes out and bodies him up and takes his confidence away. But you hope that that kind of snowballs and he can continue that confidence because he and Stastny looked fantastic last night.
So I'm going to throw this out there as a way to foster creativity for Cody Glass and to maybe fix Alex Tuch. We've talked about putting Alex Tuch back on the right side. I think that needs to happen, right? Like, that's clearly something that I think he needs just to get himself right and playing the right way. Chandler Stephenson has been fine. He's been good. I still like his speed on the second line.
He was so good last night, though.
I know that, but do you try to shuffle around a little bit? And here's my thought process. Whether it's Carrier on the left, whether it's Stephenson on the left, it doesn't much matter to me in terms of the third line, but either Carrier, Stephenson, left wing, Stastny, center, Tuck, back on the right wing, Cody Glass moves up to play 2C with Stone and Pacioretty.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against that. I see what you're saying. Like, we talk about confidence, and, like, mental is a big part of the NHL is mental, any sport.
Yep.
And I think a guy like Tuck, who isn't confident, he doesn't feel good about his game right now. He isn't playing well. Something as simple as you're back on the right can do a lot, because Tuck then goes into that game thinking, like, all right, there's a reason why my game's going to be fixed. Whereas if he stays on the left, he goes into a game thinking, all right, I'm going to fix my game. But then the first thing that goes wrong, he's like, oh, man, I can't. Like, I'm just not. I don't have it right now. Whereas if you put him on the right, I think it could, just in his mind, he's thinking going into the game like, all right, I am going to play well because I play better on the right side. And that could kind of fix him. The Golden Knights need Alex Tuch going because he's one of the, like, he's not one of the best players on the team, but he is an X factor for this team because not many teams have forwards as talented as Alex Tuch on the third line. He can be a major difference maker for this team if he plays up to his potential.
And the thing we're not even talking about right now is Cody Eakin, who seems to be getting closer and closer and closer.
Today, he skated with the team for the first time. He has skated after the team a couple times the last few days. Today, he was in his blue no-contact jersey, so I guess you can't say full participant, but he was in every drill. He skated all the way till the end of practice, so he's clearly getting pretty close. Gerard Gallant may have let one slip the other day in the press conference. It was about 3 or 4 days ago. I asked him, what do you do? I was like, it's a good problem to have too many centers, but when Cody Eakin comes back, you clearly have too many centers. Like, what do you do? And he goes, well, that's still 2 weeks away. And then he, like, stopped himself and goes, well, not that Cody Eakin is 2 weeks away, but there's some time. So, like, clearly that was – so I'd say he's about a week and a half. That was an accidental admission by Gallant that he's about 2 weeks away.
So Cody Eakin probably not playing on Saturday, probably won't play on Tuesday.
I think the end of this road trip, like, the last game of the road trip is, like, maybe, but most likely it's going to be – that road trip to Buffalo, Ottawa, Montreal, Boston. I'm thinking he can probably returns at some point during that.
So what the hell do you do then?
That's, well, and like Gallant said, and like I always say on this show, people are going to get hurt. So
sure.
Like,
yeah, I get it.
It's tough to, like, yeah, right now they're kind of stuck. Like, there's not a lot they can do. They have too many guys. But who knows how, like Marchessault, nobody expected him to miss last night, and then he misses the game with a lower body injury. So, like, guys are going to get dinged up. So I'm not even, I feel like it's, we like spend so much time talking about what they do when they're healthy, and then those situations like almost never play out.
But what are they going to do when they're healthy?
Yeah. Let's look at these questions that we got today.
So the first one that I'm seeing from Prairie Boy 66. So at Pond Hockey 66. I am assuming somewhere in Canada. Confidence is the greatest drug for a hockey player. Cody Glass was on fire last night. Prior to that, anyone on the third played in a fog. What is about third line that causes that? All good players on it. Only thing I think of everything wants off it. So they play solo, no chemistry, no flow. How do you maintain or increase confidence of all players? We've talked about this quite a bit here to start the podcast. Confidence is it can be built off of something incredibly simple and seemingly menial, right? Like you were just talking about with Alex Tuch. You move him back to the right side, that might be everything that he needs.
Yeah. I will say, what is it? Like, the question is, like, what is it about the third line? And, like, if we knew the answer to this, we'd be NHL coach. Like, Gerard Gallant doesn't know the answer to why the third line doesn't work. Like, the coaching staff can't figure it out. My hypothesis would be, what is, like, they don't know what they want the third line to be, and it ends up being a mismatch, like you said, of just the extra parts. Because the first line has been the first line since the beginning of time, since Jesus Christ. Wow. Marchessault, Carlson, Smith. That will be the first line.
Year zero, buddy.
Yeah, the year zero. The second line is the most talented forwards we've got. Let's put them all on that line.
And then Chandler Stevenson.
Then, yeah, well, like, they're kind of mixing it up now, and, like, maybe that's what will make the third. But, like, traditionally, it's been Stastny, Pacioretty, Stone. Then the fourth line, we know what the fourth line is.
Yep.
They're going to hit the shit out of you. That's, like, that's what they do. And
bang
every
bodies.
Once in a while, they might score. They're
bang bodies play in the offensive zone. On the right side of the puck.
And then the third line has always, for like the last 2.5 seasons, it's always been, okay, who's left?
Well, and it's funny because when you look at the third line traditionally for the Golden Knights, it's always been like two top six players that are on the outside looking in because this team is deep, and one bottom six player that is just kind of there, right?
Yeah.
And then you have a desire, as Gerard Gallant talked about in the past, to not necessarily care one way or another if your third line scores. So when you have two guys who want to score, and then you've got one guy who just kind of wants to play the right way and chip pucks in, there's no flow because you've got three guys that play different styles and there's no clear objective.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that if you were to define the third line as, nah, screw it, we want you guys to score. Like, go out there, take the breaks off. You can be a little bit more risky. Try some things. Maybe you see a little bit more confidence for that line. And I think you're seeing it a bit with Paul Stastny.
Yeah.
And that, like, to me, that's a vote of confidence. This is the most talented collection of forwards the Golden Knights have ever had.
Correct. I agree.
And we're talking, if you have the ability to put Stastny, Tuck, and Glass on your third line, that should produce offense.
You'd think.
And it should be their number one objective to do so.
Yeah.
You have enough defensive responsibility with lines one and two to not have to have your third line be a defensive stalwart.
I agree.
So there's that. Michaela, not a question, but a comment. I'll have something to listen to on my way home from work. Well, thank you very much, Michaela, for listening to the podcast. Anything you want to, any questions that you're seeing, just go ahead and throw them out.
Let me just go down them because it's on my Twitter this time for once. Okay, Patrick Harrington, some coverage of the All-Star game would be cool. This is Gallant's first time coaching. No, it's actually the third time he's been to the All-Star game, second as a head coach, I believe. Second for sure as a Golden Knights head coach. Obviously, he was the All-Star coach in year one when they went to the Cup Final because it's whoever's leading the division at that moment. So they pretty much led the division start to finish that year. They won the All-Star Championship, their little tournament that they do. They do a four-team tournament with each division, and the Pacific Division won that year with James Neal, Marc-Andre Fleury, Connor McDavid was on that team. So Gerard Gallant has never lost an All-Star game as Golden Knights head coach. So undefeated, trying to defend that title this year.
this Juan Merrill.
Oh, love me some Juan Merrill.
Is this whole podcast going to be devoted to John Merrill, power forward, shutdown defender, or just most of it? Don't need to suggest it as a topic, as the whole sports universe is still talking about it. Yeah. Yep. Yes. As much John Merrill as we can possibly get into this podcast. Steven Patak, this one's good. You're going to like this one. Best looking pads, all white, all black, or old school tan?
Man. So, like, I hate it when people answer questions, like, straddling the line, like, oh, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Have some conviction.
Well, if you make me choose, you can only have one.
That's the whole point.
I'm taking all white.
All white.
But there are certain situations where, like, for the outdoor games,
Sure. Give
me all tan, old school. I want them to, like, I want them roughed up. Like, drive over them with a cement truck.
Yeah, for sure.
I love the all tan look for the outdoor games. Was it Smith who wore them this year? I forgot who it was. One of the goalies had the all tan pads in one of the outdoor games. They play so many damn outdoor games, I can't keep track of them.
It's hard to keep track
of. But they look phenomenal then. Overall, all white pads. But I will say that Subban's solid whites don't look nearly as good at home with the gray jerseys. If you could have all blacks for dark uniform and all whites for the road whites, that's perfect scenario right there.
Well, you could, which and Subban did it for a little while, but
yeah, last
stopped
year
with the all black pads. Okay, so this whole question kind of came from a sub chat that I had with Patak about it. So he was showing me some designs for some goalie pads. He's like, "What do you think?" I'm like, "Well, they're better than Subban's all white ones." And so we start talking about it, right? And I was like, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I am a fan of the brown, tan, old school leather pads. Like, I think they're fantastic. And if you're going to go with one solid color, one color, that's it. No more. No more than that. It should be solid brown, solid tan. Like, those are my favorite pads. Indoor, outdoor, clearly with throwback jerseys, it's much better.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, there's just something about those pads. That's what I grew up on.
I feel like Marc-Andre Fleury with, like, this Golden Knights jersey that didn't exist until two years ago.
It would
wearing
be weird.
Brown pad. Like, what the hell is going on? Whereas when you're wearing it with, like, the throwback Canucks uniforms, yeah, they look phenomenal.
Well, here's the
thing,
right?
Those pads actually existed when those jerseys were
so
worn.
So, perfect example. Like, if you were to take the Nashville Predators' current jerseys, Pekka-Rinne, UC Saros cannot wear old-school tan pads.
It would be ridiculous.
It would look awful. But if one of those two guys wore those pads in that Winter Classic, it'd have been fucking sick.
Yeah, great. Yeah, you got to have old-looking jerseys to go with the pads.
Like, if Carey Price showed up tomorrow with tan pads, it would be the greatest look in the NHL.
Phenomenal, yeah. Montreal's got the historic
look. If Calgary would just
look.
Bite the bullet and go back to their retros full-time, it should be mandated that any goalie that plays for them wears tan pads, period. They're not allowed to wear anything
else.
I'm
in for that.
I'm just saying, like, I don't know. Aesthetically, I think they're the best, but I do agree it has to be with the right jersey format.
Yeah.
The Golden Knights jerseys do not lend themselves to traditionalist pads.
All right. Let's look. Daniel Reynolds. I know you say we don't want rentals, but call me crazy. I am. What about Bufflin? I think he just wants to come back to the league. Just not with the Jets. Fourth line would be lethal. I don't think he's as hurt as it sounds. I also think the Jets would burden the contract. Okay, sorry, that threw me off. That threw me off a little bit.
Well, he's a defenseman.
Yeah, so John Merrill's the only defenseman we're playing on the fourth line this year. Dustin Bufflin will have to play blue line. I'll tell you this. If I have I have no idea what's going on with Dustin Bufflin right now. If Dustin Bufflin said, I want to come back to the NHL, but I'm not playing for the Jets, and then the Jets then agreed to trade him, and it wasn't crazy expensive, hell yes, give me Dustin Bufflin.
But it's going to be crazy expensive.
Yeah,
the Jets aren't retaining that salary.
Yeah, I just don't know how realistic it is. But if you want to ask me, can Dustin Bufflin help this team?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he can.
Yes, 100%
he's awesome.
Yes. If Dustin Bufflin was available, then absolutely. But understand the Winnipeg Jets are not going to retain salary. And it's not like they can just nullify the contract either.
Yeah.
Like, if he came back, he was fit enough to play, then that's the contract that he has. You've got to, as the team trading for him, figure it out under the cap. I don't know how much he's making right now. I want to say it's over $6 million per, and I want to say he's got this season and then one more season on top of that. So I don't know that the Golden Knights can fit it in. That's the main thing. Like, if you went after Byfuglien, I think he can absolutely be a fit for what you need, but I think it's a little too steep in terms of what the Golden Knights would need to commit to it.
7.6 for Byfuglien.
It is not possible. Without salary retained or without the Golden Knights moving a significant piece to make it happen.
They'd have to send both Winnipeg boys back up home, so Eakin and Reeves, and then probably another piece in order to open up enough room.
Yeah, but the problem is, if you're the Jets, you probably want a defenseman that's ready to play right now
back.
You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah, that's a tough salary cap like fit. That trade doesn't really fit salary wise.
Now, if we were operating in a world that didn't have a salary cap, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. All right. So Mike St. Germain, who is a very loyal listener and reader, love Mike. He asked something along the same lines. Assuming you believe Foley's recent comments in Blessing's interview, that's Brian Blessing, does an awesome job. He gets Foley more than anyone. Saying they would not only look at a player that could not be signed, not a rental. Sorry, a player that could be signed, not a rental. What puck moving Ds are reasonable targets to acquire? And do you think 2 to 3 year contract would be about right for the term? So to answer Mike, I think the whole we don't want a rental thing is overblown from both McPhee and McCrimmon and Foley. I think, yeah, they don't want to give up a bunch of good picks. Like, of course, because no team wants to give up a bunch of first-round picks for a guy to leave that summer. But I don't think the Golden Knights are going to have an issue re-signing anyone that they want to re-sign. So let's just use the guy who I've talked about forever, Erik Gustafsson.
Sure.
Great defenseman for the Chicago Blackhawks. He's a UFA at the end of the year. Chicago has shown no signs of wanting to re-sign him, so they're most likely going to want to unload him at the trade deadline. Now, the Golden Knights could trade for him, and technically that's a rental because he's a UFA at the end of the year. But you're telling me Gustafsson comes here, sees the practice facility. Every player who's ever come to this team can't shut the hell up about how much they like Vegas and the practice facility and the room and the coaches. I don't see any way that when summer gets here, Erik Gustafsson or whoever the rental is says, absolutely not signing with you guys. I want to hit free agency. All you have to do is offer the, and like you can use that time period as a way to see, does this guy fit on our team? Mm-hmm. Is it Tomáš Tatar? A good player who doesn't fit here, or does he fit in the room? Does he fit on the team? Is it worth signing them to a longer term deal? So I don't think rentals are completely out of the question. I just don't think when they say rental, they mean we're not going to sign it. We're not going to trade for a guy who's going to leave in you as a UFA.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't even think it's we're not going to trade for a guy that won't sign as a UFA. I think it's we're giving ourselves a shot. Like, we're not gonna waste our time on a player that we know is going to market and is not going to listen to anything that we say. Like, you talk about Gustafsson. He's looking for a payday, but I think that there's the ability to sway him or bring him down on a price if he likes where he's at and he likes the role that he's going to have. Part of the reason the Erik Karlsson deal fell through is that Erik Karlsson was always going to take 1 year to figure his shit out. And the Golden Knights didn't want to commit to breaking up part of their young prospects for a maybe. And I understand that. Like, I get it. I totally do. But the Golden Knights, I think, when they talk about rental, it might not be, hey, we're going to sign a guy and immediately re-sign him, but we are going to trade for a guy that might not cost us that much, that will be a factor for this team. And if we can convince him, if he's at least open to having communication, that's good enough for us.
Yeah.
Because that's where it should be right now. Objective number one is winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Well, and you shouldn't let your stances on a rental or UFA and all that stuff get in the way of that.
I also think price has a lot to do with it. Like, Erik Karlsson, you were going to send probably the Mark Stone package and then some. You're talking your best prospect in your pipeline, Erik Brännström, really high draft picks. Like, whereas, like, if Gustafsson was going to cost a first-round pick and a prospect, no, it's not worth the rental.
Yeah.
But you can get him for less. So, like, even if he does leave in free agency, or say he doesn't fit and you don't even want to sign him, you only gave up a second round pick or whatever it is for Gustafson. So I think the price also has a lot to do.
But
I am not convinced that all future UFAs are off the table. Like, we're not trading for a future UFA. I disagree with that.
As much as it pains me to say, I think Alex Pietrangelo's off the table.
Yeah, I think the Blues want to keep him around for their back-to-back run.
Hold on. I've got one from Ted Krampus.
Okay.
Is John Merrill a better forward in 2020 than Joe Thornton?
Yes. Has Thornton scored?
I don't know.
He hadn't scored.
I think he scored in 2019. I think he did end up with a goal to end the year. I feel like he's got one, maybe two.
Let's look up Joe Thornton.
But I don't care. The
answer
is yes.
Yeah, I mean, John Merrill's better than Connor McDavid right now as a forward in 2019. Thornton has one goal and 15 assists in 42 games. He is a negative -8 on the season. He is bad at hockey. Joe Thornton has not had a good season. He is done for sure. Another one from Ted Krampus. Okay, serious question. I think we all want Olympic or best-on-best international hockey back bad. If we get Beijing 2022, does Patches have a shot to make the U.S. team? He'll be 33, but can I dream of a U.S.-born VGK rooting interest? I think that would be awesome. I think every hockey fan in the world wants best of the best international competition, hopefully the Olympics. It's a lot of fun, and it's cool to see the players that we're so used to watching play with different players. Like, it's almost like why I like the Olympics and like World Cup of Hockey when they did that is it's almost like video game, right? Because in a video game, you're like, I want to see what happens when you put Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby on the same team. You get that in the Olympics.
Fireworks.
It's ridiculous. So like, it's a cool little break to see these players with other teammates that we have like that you kind of like wonder about. So I hope we get it. I don't know if Pacioretty's gonna be good enough to make the U.S. team. I would have to look at the roster and break it down.
Well, okay. So you've got Patrick Kane. You've got who I would assume would be right there, probably the captain. Phil Kessel would probably be right there. Joe Pavelski might still play then, so probably Pavelski. Jonathan Quick would not be the goalie anymore. Dustin Brown, probably seen his last international competition. And then you've got Austin Matthews. You've got Jack Eichel. You've got Johnny Gaudreau. I mean, there's a ton of young American talent in the game right now that might push Pacioretty back a bit, but the way that he's been playing, if he keeps that up for the next couple of years, absolutely.
So at The Athletic, we did The Athletic Cup, which we we like simulated what it would be. So Team USA, Max Pacioretty is not currently
on. What are you doing, Granger?
This is not me.
Why do you hate the Golden Knights?
This is Mr. Craig Custance, who is like team, like, I don't know if anybody covers Team USA more than him, but like top line for Team USA is Austin Matthews, Johnny Gaudreau, and Patrick Kane.
Weird. I talked about all three of those guys.
Second line is Jack Eichel, Jake Guentzel, and Blake Wheeler. So like now we're getting to like, okay, Pat, like I could see Pacioretty being up there with those two for sure.
They had Guentzel on the left?
Yeah.
Pacioretty is a better option to be.
I agree.
Gensel.
Third line is Dylan Larkin, Alex DeBrincat, and Matthew Tkachuk. I think Pacioretty is better than both of those wingers. Fourth line is Vincent Trocheck, Brock Besser, and Kyle Connor.
Which Tkachuk? Was it Matthew or Brady?
Matthew.
Brady's not on the team?
No.
Brady's the better Tkachuk.
He is not on the team.
It's weird.
Man, this team would be fun to watch. Jacob Slavin, John Carlson is the top pairing defenseman. Ryan Suter, Seth Jones, Ryan McDonough, Charlie McAvoy, and then Gibson and Hellebuck in goal. Man, see, like, I want that so bad. Like, give us the Olympics, damn it.
Yeah, give me John Gibson and Connor Hellebuck together. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Both guys are loose cannons when it comes to interviews. They're fantastic.
Yeah, they are.
So I just find it really ironic and kind of funny that the NHL decides to screw their players out of the Olympics. And in doing so, they're like, oh, well, we're going to do the World Cup of Hockey every 4 years because, you know, that'll replace it and it works better with our schedule and it's easier on the players. And then the first option that they have to actually get the World Cup of Hockey on a 4-year schedule, they don't do it and they opt out, which there will be no World Cup of Hockey, which was supposed to happen at the beginning of next season. So, way to go, NHL. Yeah. You guys are really, really hitting this one out of the park.
Dropping the ball on that one for sure.
Dry rain dinner. This will be fun. Gallant attitude towards questions he doesn't like. Seems very moody and not willing to have a reasonable discussion about real issues.
I think, and like I've said this before on here, Gerard Gallant doesn't handle negative stuff after games all that well. That's no news to anybody. He is very fiery like he was as a player. I think, and like I wrote the story, Gerard Gallant, his players see him as a teammate a lot of times, and that's part of what makes him such an effective coach. Part of the reason he's coaching in the All-Star game for the second time in 3 years. He won Jack Adams. Part of the reason his players like him so much is because he's like a player almost. He's still very fiery, and that can be an issue when you're a head coach and you go up to the podium and you're still a little fired up after a game. I have learned over the last couple years covering Gallant to, if I have a question that I think might bother him, I can get a much better answer if I save it for the next day, because the next day he comes in, he's completely different. He's over the game. He's now had a time. He's had time to digest what happened. He'll give you a much better answer. This morning, after him walking out of the press conference last night, he comes in and says, "I'm still a little grumpy," joking around, like poking fun at himself. Like, he understands after the fact, like, okay, he can calm down. He can digest it. He's a lot better. He's fiery after games. There's no denying it.
He's a competitor. And so last night, he took exception with a question about that used the phrase holding on.
Yeah.
Like, that's where it all snowballed.
Holding on for dear life.
Holding on for dear life. Here's the thing, and this might sound a bit ridiculous coming from me, but it's the truth. Even though the Golden Knights allowed that fourth goal from Sean Couturier, the rest of that period, they played pretty well up until the penalties. The Golden Knights, through an entire 60-minute game, in all situations, held the Flyers to just 10 high-danger scoring chances. So, overall, and we joked about the first period being loosey-goosey, and there were plenty of chances up and down. From the second period on, the Golden Knights really did take care of their own end. And just because the team, the Flyers, were able to come back into the game, I think the big story coming out of it is, the Golden Knights went into the third period with a lead. Yes, they were scored on, but yes, they closed the game out.
Yeah, and a 6-on-3 power play for 43 seconds. Like, that's a goal 90% of the time.
But that's not holding on, right? Like, that's not holding on.
And that's what Gallant...
That's looking at the situation that's been presented to you. That's looking at the cards, the adversity that you're being dealt in a game, and finding a way to fucking win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I see why the question was asked, because they did kind of hold on at the end. It was like, it was very desperate, but it wasn't because the team sat back and held on. It was because they were down three men. So you give a team a three-man advantage, you're gonna be holding on. And Braden McNabb was absolutely phenomenal in that last couple minutes.
What McNabb said after the game, it's probably more awkward for them because they've got an extra guy and they've no clue what the fuck to do with him.
Yeah, it's, you don't practice a lot of 6-on-3.
No, zero.
It's probably never been practiced in any of these players' careers. So, so he didn't like the first question, and then as we've seen with Gallant, like, if a question bothers him, the next question, if it's a negative question, he's not going to be thrilled with it. And like, I thought the question was a legit question. They have struggled against playoff teams. It could have been worded a little different, maybe shorter, because
was it the right time?
I think the length of the question bothered him.
Was it the right time for that question?
I'm fine with it. They beat a team that was above them in the standings when they've struggled against teams above them in the standings. I'm fine with the timing of the question.
I feel like that question plays out differently if it's asked after the Golden Knights beat St. Louis on Saturday.
Completely agree, because I think Gallant views St. Louis and Colorado and
as
Boston and Washington
legitimate
as
playoff
when you
teams.
Beat one of those teams, you're like, all right, like that was a statement win. When you beat the Flyers, even though the Flyers are like technically 0.03 percentage points above Vegas, I think Gallant thinks we're better than the Flyers. And like that shouldn't even be a statement that we beat them type of thing. So you're right. Yeah. If it's after a more obvious contender,
yep,
it goes down differently.
I feel like that's the big part that Gallant was probably upset about. It's like, ask me after we beat a legitimate contender. Because, you know, the Flyers are fine. They're perfectly fine where they are, but no one's looking at the Philadelphia Flyers as the class of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. Nobody saw the Golden Knights beat the Flyers and say, oh man, Golden Knights are back.
Yeah. They really figured out a way to slay Goliath
They're hitting their stride. Whereas if they do that tomorrow night, if they beat St. Louis, that's four in a row. All of a sudden, the national implications will be like the national opinion of that will be, wow, Golden Knights are finally what they were supposed to be.
And to be honest with you, I think that that question would have played incredibly well after assuming the Golden Knights beat Colorado the next time they play, because Colorado has come in and spanked Vegas in the two times that they've played this year. If that question's asked after Gerard Gallant and the Golden Knights go into Colorado and beat the Avalanche, it plays so much differently.
In the end, my stance on this is I think the question was fine.
I do too.
I understand why the question was asked. I understand why Gallant didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't think it's that big a deal.
Listen,
yeah, he got up. He was kind of angry.
He was mad. It was
walked off.
He almost said, what the fuck? It was great.
It's not that big of a deal. Like,
well, I think a lot of people don't understand the dynamic in the room, right? Like
people who aren't in the room.
That aren't in the room don't understand the dynamic in the room.
Who would have thought?
And like, I'm in the room probably 70% of the time. Obviously, after games, I'm not in the room because I'm doing the post-game show. But I'm in the room almost every other time that there's media availability, and you understand the dynamic. There are hard questions that you've got to ask. Sometimes they're not going to be met well. That's why you and Ken and everybody that reports on this team, they take a lot of time and a lot of energy trying to craft a question the way that they need to ask it in order for it to get the response that they're looking for, not the answer they're looking for, but the right type of response from Gallant or a player without pissing them off to the point where they just walk away. You don't get anything.
Yeah.
And like, reporters aren't going in there trying to piss off Gerard Gallant, and Gallant's not looking at every question as an opportunity to blow up and be angry about something. It's a delicate balance trying to find the best ways and the best spots to drop in questions that are a little bit more difficult than, so you won the game 5-4, how do you feel?
Yeah.
So, Cody Cheek, this is a good one. What do you think is the biggest issue with Nate Schmidt's game right now?
Skating.
It's been tough.
Nate Schmidt's best asset as a player is his skating ability. It's why he's able to be a top defenseman. He can mirror the opponent, keep the spacing, and not get blown by like he did by Travis Konecny last night. Like, it's Konecny blew past him like you don't see happen to Nate Schmidt very often.
And it's not just that one play. Like, there was a play earlier in the game where puck comes back to Nate Schmidt. He's in the middle of the zone, and he just kind of flubs a shot and immediately goes back into a 2-on-1. And granted, it didn't lead to anything, but he's just not confident with the puck. He's not skating well without the puck.
He looks a little flat-footed. So I'm not going to put the first goal on. The second goal was on Nate Schmidt. Konecny blew past him.
Oh, yeah.
It was also on Fleury for a mistimed poke check, which seems like 90% of the goals he gives up now are because he's trying to poke check. Just play goalie, Fleury. Anyways.
From that angle, Konecny probably wouldn't have had much if Fleury just...
Yeah, just play goalie.
Yep. Okay. Anyway,
but
go on.
Anyways, the second one I'll put on Schmidt. The first one, I don't want to put it all on Schmidt because I think Tuck also fell asleep and his guy was the one who snuck in front and got the one-timer. Yep. But 2 seconds before that goal, the puck gets flipped into the corner. Schmidt was the closest man to the puck when it got flipped there, and he got beat to the puck. And he gets beat to the puck, and then the puck goes behind the net to whoever it was that centered it for the one-timer. And then not only does Schmidt get beat to the puck, he's slow getting back to the front of the net, and then that's why Tuck's guy was wide open there. So, like, you don't see Schmidt get beat to pucks and get beat to spaces on the ice very often. And when it's happening, I think it's a cause for concern. And, like, this isn't me saying Nate Schmidt is the reason they're losing. He's the worst player on the team. Nate Schmidt's still really good, but you need him playing at an elite level. And he's been well below his standard of play over the last, maybe for the whole season, but at least for the last month for sure.
Probably all season. Because what Nate does so well hinges on his ability to skate. and it just hasn't been there. I don't know why. It's hard to try to guess as to why that is, but because like all the variables are equal, right? Like,
yeah, he's still with McNabb, the same guy he's been playing with forever.
I don't know how to fix it though.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of, and like this is a touchy, like this is a not an easy decision to make, but at what point do you decide, let's put Shea Theodore against the best? Because right now, as bad as Nate Schmidt has been, he and McNabb are still the shutdown guys. They're right. Playing against the opposing top lines. Shea Theodore, as good as he's been, he's out there against the top lines every once in a while, but he's not shadowing them. Shea Theodore is out there to create. At what point do you flip that and put Shea Theodore against those top? Because maybe that hurts Shea Theodore's offensive output. We saw that early in the year when Nate Schmidt was out. Theodore didn't, you don't want to take away Theodore's offense because that's a huge part of the reason they're winning right now. But could he do better against the top? Like that's not an easy decision to make.
That's the first time that I remembered Nate Schmidt missed time with a lower body injury. Maybe he's just not completely healthy. Like he's healthy enough to play, but he's not healthy enough to be Nate Schmidt.
You think the knee is still bothering him and that's why his skating's not quite as...
I mean, it makes sense, right? You suffer a knee injury in the first game of the year and you try to come back and all of a sudden we're looking at your skating and we're like, it's not up to par. It's not up to where it was. Oh shit. Well,
that
maybe that
makes a lot of sense.
The actual reason. Maybe it's just simply Nate Schmidt got hurt in the first game of the year and it's going to take him a little bit longer to get back to what Nate Schmidt is.
Anyone who plays, not even just hockey, like literally anything at any level, you hurt something and you don't let it heal, that thing is going to hurt forever. Right? Like I twist my ankle like and I don't let it heal. My ankle, I'm going to be playing on it every night, but it hurts and it bothers me a little bit. Maybe Schmidt's been playing through that knee all season. Like that's certainly a possibility.
Yep.
All right. Brian at Lindy Large. He's got a three-part question. I like all three of them.
Whoa.
He would like us to hit on 1, adding a defenseman. 2, getting Subban more playing time.
Mm-hmm.
3, Ryan the Hockey Guy's matzo ball soup. Let's start with number 3.
Yep. It was delicious.
Was it good? I've never eaten matzo ball soup.
You've never had it?
Nope.
Okay, I'll have to make it. Everything was really good. I remembered my mom's recipe for the most part. Her matzo balls were always very, very fluffy. They weren't very dense. They were big and... mine were a bit denser, so I've got to perfect that. But all in all, absolutely phenomenal. Delicious soup.
Very good. I need to try it.
I'll make you some. One day, I will make you some. Yep.
Do you make it the traditional way, or do you, like, do substitutes for certain things?
Well, I
don't know what's in a normal matzo ball soup.
Yeah, the binder's typically egg, so I'd use an egg replacer, and I feel like that's part of the problem with the density, but... I've got a few things that I can try that are a little bit different than what I used over the break that might yield a fluffier matzo ball.
All right. As to number 2, getting Subban more playing time, I feel like I'm the train engineer on the train of get Subban more playing time. Like I am the one leading that charge most of the time. I'm fine with like I think they've been playing Subban plenty.
Well, clearly he gets a lot of action when Marc-Andre Fleury is on his leave, but before that they were getting Malcolm into a rhythm, and I think it was the point from the beginning of the season. It's just unfortunate in his first start Malcolm got hurt. That being said, right now you're in a pretty good spot in terms of how spread out the games are, plus you're going into the All-Star break, plus you're going into the bye week. So if there was ever a point in the season where you would want to play Marc-Andre Fleury maybe a little bit more than you're used to, it would probably be this stretch here, though I still think Malcolm factors into 2 games in the month of January. And that's saying something because they don't play a whole heck of a lot this month.
Yeah, they do have the 2 weeks off because the All-Star break and the bye week. But like, so you mentioned, okay, yeah, Subban played a bunch of games in a row when Fleury was on leave. But since Fleury has come back, this has been the cadence of the goalies. And I think this is, if you can continue this cadence throughout an 82-game season, it's ideal for both. It has been Fleury, Fleury, Subban, Fleury, 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 Subban, Fleury, Subban, Fleury, Fleury, Fleury. Like, Basically, Fleury should be playing three games in a row, play Subban, then maybe two, then Subban, then three, then Subban. Like, don't have Fleury play five games in a row. That's too long for Subban to sit out. It's breaking down Fleury's body over an 18-game schedule. Look at, and like, I know that they don't look at it in a, like, one game at a time thing with the goalies. They look at it in games of three. The next three games, what do we need? And, like, find the easier games, the home games, give them to Subban. Put Fleury against the games that you really need, against Arizona, and I guess Vancouver now is kind of contending for that Pacific. Like, the games you need, play Fleury in those games. And give Subban one out of every four games. Fleury plays 75%, Subban plays 25%, and everybody's happy.
I don't have anything to add to that. I think that it'll all be dependent too on what Subban does within those games. Like, if he looks like he needs a little bit more work, you probably get him into a couple more games.
Maybe.
By focusing on what Fleury also needs, right? Like, if Fleury's struggling for a game or two, then don't be afraid to go to Malcolm Subban. Like, I think that's kind of the big thing that I'm noticing is Marc-Andre Fleury had a stretch of two games where he wasn't particularly great. Go to Malcolm Subban just to break it up, just to give it a little bit, just to give it a different feel. And then, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury's going to come back better.
And also, I will say this. I think it's important to get Fleury as many games off right now. Like, keep this cadence going that way. Because ultimately, when the playoffs get here, the most important thing is Marc-Andre Fleury 100% healthy, 100% fresh, and in the form you want him going into the playoffs? And if you give him a bunch of games off now, so Fleury's been constantly, he's always has said, I like playing a lot, and I play better when I play a lot.
Sure.
What if you give him a bunch of rest all season? That way, when March gets here, you can play him seven games in a row to let him get into that rhythm that he wants. Like, you go, if you're Dave Pryor, you go to Fleury and say, how many games in a row do you want
to feel
get
ready.
Into form when the playoffs get here? Fleury says, I want six in a row. Perfect. We're going to play you less now so that when March gets here, your body's fresh, you're feeling good. We can play you six in a row. That way you're fresh, you're in form, and the playoffs get here. Because, again, I've said it a million times, the only way the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup is when if Marc-Andre Fleury is awesome in the playoffs. And that should be the number one determining factor for literally every decision you make with the goalies. Yes, it's good to get Subban games so that he plays well, but that's not in the end. It doesn't matter how good Malcolm Subban is once the playoffs get here. It's all Fleury. That's all that matters once the playoffs.
All right, here's one that I want to get to. Probably an unpopular one. We'll see. Zach Attack, 34. I hate the Vegas Lights song that plays when they score. I also hate daytime, nighttime. You think T-Mobile needs to switch up their music and other usual things that play in the stadium, or am I alone on this?
Just to be clear, when I read that tweet, when he tweeted it, who was it that sent that?
Zach Attack.
When he sent that, I read daytime, nighttime, and I was like, what the hell is he talking about? But then when you just said it verbally, I got it. Do you know what it is?
It's nighttime during the day?
No. It's that freaking bird that, like, puts his wings over his head, and he's like, daytime, nighttime. It's like to get your attention on the board.
No,
and then that's when they do the, you know, where they do, like, if you're a redhead, clap your hands. If you're a blonde, clap your hands.
That package I like.
I love it.
I like that one. Okay.
The nighttime, daytime bird, it's nighttime, like a stork.
Daytime.
It is kind of annoying. Yeah.
Oh, that. The two package, okay, that's one of the packages I can do without. One of the other ones I can do without is Ace Ventura. I hate that one. I can't do it with the sliding glass door.
Oh, yeah.
I can't
Jim
do
Carrey,
that one.
Yeah, I didn't know that was Ace Ventura. I knew it was Jim Carrey. I didn't know which movie it was
from. You didn't know that was Ace Ventura?
I couldn't tell which Jim Carrey movie that was from.
Oh, come on. It's pretty distinct. His hair style, everything.
Yeah.
Finkel is Einhorn.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the I'm okay with Jim Carrey. I don't whatever. Like, I hate the freaking woo, whatever that wrestler's name is.
Ric Flair.
Come on. I can't stand
whatever
it.
That wrestler's name is.
I absolutely despise it.
The Nature Boy.
You won't find a human being on this earth that hates that woo more than me. I hate it. Absolutely despise it.
I'm not a fan of that either. I don't like it. It's annoying for sure.
As far as the music in the game goes, I think, and like I've been to, I think 25 of the 31 arenas now. Vegas is the best, and it's not close.
So, yesterday I was incredibly happy. I like music. Music is fun. Music is really cool. Just all kinds of music. But Jake Wagner played New Year by Death Cab for Cutie, and it is quite literally the best New Year's song in existence. Fuck you two. Seriously.
I've never even heard of this song, but I'm going to have to hear it.
Take that song, take New Year's Day, and tell it to go fuck itself. Like, legit, Death Cab for Cutie, you two can't hold their jock. I'm just saying it like it is. I don't care. Don't at me. Death Cab, much better than you two. But yeah, I was pretty excited. I like the music in game. Like, they go pretty deep into some albums to bring out some really good stuff. So I always got to give a stick tap to Jake Wagner and to DJ Joe Green. They do a phenomenal job. The packages, I think they can get better, but they're still not bad. Like, not when you consider some other packages and some other in-game entertainment that's there. The intermission games are always interesting. The musical chairs just seems like a horrible idea.
It's just a compound fracture waiting
to
happen.
Yes, it really is. And then the new open. We're going to have to end here. But the new open, does the Golden Knight, like, destroy Mount Charleston?
I don't know.
That's how I take it. So every team shows up and they throw an avalanche at the Golden Knight, which, like, we saw it happen against the Avalanche for the first time. So we thought that maybe it was just an avalanche. And, like, when they played the Coyotes, maybe a herd of coyotes or you know, the Ducks. We did get to see the flying V. So the Golden Knight murdered the flying V.
I'm in for that. So
that's fun. But then, like, everything is covered in snow, and then the Golden Knight stabs the ice, and then he lets out a guttural scream, and then stabs the ice again, and then the, like, one half of the mountain collapses, and the other half stays the same.
I have no idea.
Golden Knight's just out here murdering people? Like, what is going on?
I'm for the Golden Knight murdering people in the pregame.
Like, I mean, he's done a lot of bad things.
Yeah. To wrap up that, though, because he did ask about the goal song also.
Yes.
I think Vegas Lights is a fine song. It's by a band from Vegas. It fits the team. It's still not Danza Kuduro, which is the greatest song.
Come on.
It's the greatest song in the history of music.
It should
100% be the goal song.
No.
Anyone who doesn't think Danza Kuduro should be the goal song is just wrong. But
it should be Gold on the Ceiling by the Black.
But that's already taken by like three teams.
I get it. But when they wear their gold jerseys, eventually,
maybe,
whenever that happens.
And I know people tweeted us asking for updates. There isn't an update.
We don't have one. Trust me,
when there's news, I'll report it. There's no update right now.
You already have your jersey, don't you?
Yeah.
Granger. Is that what you see? So, all right. I think that's a great place to end the podcast. The Golden Knight killing people and collapsing mountains, right?
And Danza Kuduro.
No. Listen, Vegas Lights is a perfectly fine goal song. It's unique to Vegas.
It is.
It's very sing-songy. It lends perfectly to Go Knights Go chants.
Yes.
I mean,
it's a good goal song.
There's not much more you could ask for in terms of a goal song. Although the best part of the Winter Classic for me was watching the Dallas Stars take the ice with Cowboys from Hell playing in the background. Like, that was pretty awesome.
The whole thing was well done.
Oh, it was so good. The pig races was, well, you know, not going to see that every day.
It was great. But with the names, with the hockey player names was great.
Yes,
it was fantastic.
But I think you'll agree with me, it couldn't have happened to a better player, but the fact that Corey Perry had that walk of shame in his NHL game.
It was like a quarter mile walk of shame.
It was so good, because the best part is, as Corey Perry gets to the boards, he looks back like one of those kids that just got caught stealing a cookie. You know what I mean? Like, shit, they saw me. Oh, man, do I have to go? And then he gets off the ice, and you see on the big, giant screen himself walking out, and he's looking right at it.
You have to watch your own sad self walk down that. Yeah, it was brutal. That they need to find a way to make a walk like that in every arena.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if a guy gets kicked out of a game, he should have to skate three laps around the ice before he's allowed to exit.
Just to get berated by the fans.
Yes, that would be great. All right, Jesse, what are you working on? Where can people find your stuff?
At theathletic.com/Granger. Always have that discount code if you want to subscribe. At Jesse Granger _ on Twitter. What am I working on? So I just put up the story behind the scenes of John Merrill, how he found out he was going to play defense, who he called first. That was Paul Stastny. What kind of advice he got for playing forward for the first time. And then just like some funny quotes from him and the guys on the bench. Really good stuff behind the scenes. And then I have a story coming out tomorrow on Max Pacioretty and why it's ridiculous he has to be voted into the All-Star game because his numbers are unbelievably better than everyone else. And there's going to be some prospect stuff. Leighton Ahak is in town. We're going to go see him tonight at T-Mobile Arena playing for Ohio State. So I'll have some Leighton Ahak story up there too.
Talk to Leighton today, actually. He'll be on the Golden Knights Insider Show. Really good kid. Got a good head on his shoulders. And I feel like in 10 years, Jesse Granger is going to be writing the oral history of John Merrill's of the best offensive night in the NHL.
It would be an honor to write that story.
Be fucking great. All right. I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can find me every Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. on Fox Sports Las Vegas with Frank Harnish on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Also, every pregame, intermission, postgame show for the Golden Knights, every single game, all year long. So you can find me in many different ways. Also on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy and this very podcast. If you like the podcast, please subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a 5-star review. If you want to help us out, comments are always, always welcome. It doesn't have to be anything earth shattering. It could quite literally be hashtag suck at Granger. Hashtag is that what you see, Jesse? Hashtag like, come on. Hashtag, John Merrill is a forward. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Just something to let us know that you're out there and that you're listening and that you're interacting. And as always, thank you guys for the questions. These mailbags are a lot of fun for us. They take us into weird different tangents, but I think that that helps us sometimes just kind of free flow and do what we do. So until next time, we will talk to you later. Thank you.
Yeah, Office is rarely watched.